Welcome to the ESP Media Studios here in Kenwood, north of downtown Cincinnati. City of Losers for this week's edition of the Angry Quarterbacks. Yes, we're the two angry guys. I'm Tom Gamble of In-Game Sports. He would be Richard Skinner of Local12.com and a legitimate quarterback. Tony Pike, who played at Reading, winner. UC, loser.
NFL. Not when he played.
This week,
yeah. But not when he played.
This year.
We're in the here and now.
Okay. Forget. I don't want to hear any more about that, please. We're bringing back World Series champs from 50 years ago. It's time to wait. This isn't just about this year's Bengals. It's about every Bengal that ever was.
That's correct.
Just for the record.
And some of them not very good.
Correct. So, but anyway, he's Tony Pike, and we start this. We do three segments. We do some pro, we do some college, and we do some high school, and we'll start with college. How about that?
Let's do it.
Speaking of losers, I will tell you that I would be lying if I said I spent much time watching the UC game. To me, there were better games on. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I know you had to. Allegedly, you paid to do sideline reporting, right? So, and then we'll get to Kentucky, which we told you, Tony and I told you what was going to happen to that.
It's very disappointing.
Charade. Wow. Again, get out of the league.
They get to send Butch Jones out on a nice note this week, though. In a comeback win.
All right, but let's start with – I hope you can beat Tennessee. They're good. All right, UC, you were there, and you saw what?
A lot of bad. They were competitive. So you come off the last –
you got to be competitive.
The problem with very proud of you.
The problem with UC is they cannot play a fool. If the offense is good for a night, the defense isn't. If the offense is struggling, the defense plays well. And what I saw Saturday night, now SMU, they got two really good receivers. Sutton will be a first-round draft pick.
And the kid that's a transfer from LSU.
Yeah, but Sutton will be 6'5", runs a 4'4", 4'5". So you always send a double team to him. What I didn't understand is we allowed the other receiver to catch 17 passes. So you give up 17 passes in a game, and he's not a speed guy.
No, correct.
It was like 17 catches for 180 or 170 yards. So at no point in the game did we decide, let's go and bump this other receiver. Let's play tight on him. If he beats us deep, that's fine. I just hate sitting there and taking, much like we saw yesterday too, but you're just taking just a team saying, we're going to do this all the way down the field. And then offensively, Hayden Moore, for as up and down as he's been, you take two crucial sacks in the red zone right before
the half.
Push you out of field goal range. And then you're in overtime, last play of the game, and you try to, as you're getting
what
tackled.
What was that?
And you're still in field goal range. And as you're getting tackled,
you
try to flip the ball, gets intercepted. And that was after a SMU team converted a 4th and 26 in overtime.
Right. Well, that was the worst one.
For the guy's 17th catch. But then the defense still got back together and held him to 3.
Field goal. Which so it's like, normally, okay, if you do that, you feel you score,
that's a win.
You win.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, because you've seen every play. It seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, we knew going into the year, not the cupboard's bare, right?
I mean, no,
not
a lot. You knew they weren't matching up with Michigan and USF and UCF and teams
but
like that.
But here's what the past few games, I'm hearing more questions about coaching in-game decisions. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, I just think there's been a couple instances where, so for say this week, we get the ball back at the end of the game with a little under a minute left. Why not at 2-5 go down and try to say, hey, let's go win it now?
Especially in college football where the clock – the clock stops on first downs to where you can get up
and
clock
that point,
and lose a second.
You got to preface it. At that point, they had just drove 75 yards to tie the game after being down 8.
Right, so momentum.
You had momentum. You were moving the ball. Yeah. Get it back and go try to win the game, because when you take the passive approach
– I've never
and what happens,
that.
I think when it comes from a – when you're a
– What yard line did they take over?
25. When you're more of a defensive-oriented and minded coach, I think that's your mentality, as opposed to offense of just going
get it. Only mentality for me is if we've got the ball and we've got a chance to win, I'm going to do everything I can to give us that opportunity.
I mean, I may even – in that, if you want to even run a running play and say, let's see if we hit one, and if you don't, and at that stage but
I'm much better at the end of a game. Look, you're 2-5. If you try to force a ball and go win the game and it gets intercepted, I handled it a lot better than sitting back and letting the other team come and win.
Because you controlled your destiny at that point.
I want to be able to control and go out swinging. And that's the theme for college and NFL. And we can get to NFL this week. But go out swinging. Go out trying to come out and take it.
As a player, how would you have reacted? Would you have fought that? Would you have said something? I mean, obviously, you're in a tough spot.
As a quarterback, at some point, you just got to go and say, hey, coach, let's go win it.
Yeah.
Or let's, hey, put it on my back. where the offense is moving. That's SMU's defense wasn't good. But we don't have that right now at any level.
Was that a trust thing with Hayden Moore that they just but you made the point. They drove down, got a touchdown, got a two conversion to tie the football game.
Now I will say the thing about this team compared to last year's is that they do continue to fight. They do continue to push. They stay but at some point when you're 2-6 now, my biggest worry, you got 4 games left after this week's bye week. If you lose one of those early
you're not bowl eligible,
you
have no chance.
Good luck.
Right.
What they have though, Jared Doakes, Michael Warren, 2 freshman running backs, playing really well right now. So you're starting to see a little bit of a youth movement, and you keep these seniors involved and try to say, hey, let's play for the seniors, let's get to a bowl game. If that doesn't happen, then I think you start to see a lot more young guys play.
It was just because I did. I got a chance to listen to you. You did a fine job. You actually made a really good point at one point where I thought that was really good.
How about that?
One point.
Nice job. Yeah.
No, you.
I wasn't reporting on the mascot.
I think it was after UC had scored and you made the point of, the defense has been down here saying, hey, now it's our turn to get a stop that we have not. And you're right. Yep. It's been a case of the offense sputters for 18 minutes and then the defense sputters for 18 minutes as opposed to offense just scored. Yep. Defense needs to get a 3-and-out, get the offense back on the field, and they just have not gotten that.
Get to a game where you can go up by 2 scores because you haven't seen that yet this year.
Correct. Play from ahead. Play from ahead.
You haven't had a chance. They finally got a good, fast start this week, and then the defense sputtered. So it's frustrating to see.
Yeah. So they go into the bye week, obviously, on a losing skid. We'll see what they do when they got 4 left. Miami did win. They did they beat Buffalo. But the reality of
bowl, they got a stretch of games coming up that's really rough. Akron, Ohio,
correct,
and Eastern Michigan.
Within the first two within their division, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be difficult, so we'll see if they can keep the ball rolling. Kentucky, to me, here's
snowball. They made a gamble on a 3rd-and-1 at the end of the first half. They were down, actually, I think it was 17-7, might have even been 13-7.
It snowballed for the last 5 weeks.
No, it snowballed in the second half. But no, they had a 3rd-and-1. I think it was actually 10-7. They decide to run a play action pass and throw it deep and miss the guy. Yeah. Just missed him. I'm sitting there, I thought, good gamble. I like it. You had a chance to throw one over the top. Problem was you punted it back to Mississippi State, they go down and score, and from that point forward it just steamrolled.
And I'll ask you one more question about Kentucky. I know you're a big fan and follow them. I mean, they always seem to they can never win the game that you need to
correct? This was the one, because truth be told, you have 3 winnable games in a row leading up. I mean, you would have at least gone into Georgia with saying, look, you win this game, you win the East. Right. I mean, they're not beating Georgia, trust me.
Possibly getting ranked.
Correct. I mean, if they'd have beat Mississippi State, they probably
would. But there's always that game.
Right.
I mean, that they can't, for whatever reason.
And that's why they.
So they've got what? Tennessee, Vandy?
Tennessee, Ole Miss, and then Vandy.
Ole Miss, and then Vandy.
It almost seems like when you watch, they always play to whatever their competition. Like, they don't blow the teams they should blow out.
Their offense has not been as good this year. They ran the ball really well.
No, they've struggled in some home games against very inferior competition. Now, obviously, the big game Saturday afternoon this week, really, I mean, big playoff implication, Big Ten, but playoff. Is Ohio State hosting Penn State?
Why is that not a night game?
I don't know. Unless they actually,
from someone that's going up there Saturday, I wanted to see a night game.
The only thing I can think of is, and they've actually split the national game this week. It's Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and somebody else I can't remember. I'm guessing because of the World Series. They didn't want to go.
That's what I thought, too.
I think college football probably would have beat the World Series, to be honest with you.
That
game especially.
So after, I mean, Penn State took apart Michigan.
I was stunned.
I thought that would happen. Michigan is not very
level?
Good.
Did you think it was going to happen?
I don't think Michigan's going to be that good, just because of Michigan's defense.
But the problem is when your offense is so bad as Michigan's is, it puts your defense – I mean, the defense, once they fell behind – and let's be honest, it should have been 21-0. I mean, Penn State was driving again, then Michigan got a little momentum. You thought, maybe they make a game of it. This should be a great game.
Michigan has no playmakers. This goes to my point.
How can Michigan not have a quarterback on the roster?
They do have a kid they like that's a freshman that they've opted to redshirt, and now it's too late. And now you're at the stage where it's too late to pull the redshirt off.
Yeah, like the kicker who ended their extra point streak. Hope Jim enjoyed his night stay at the kid's house.
Yeah.
I mean, really?
He needs to take the satellite camp somewhere and get him some playmakers.
Well, I'm telling you right now, he's no better than Brady Hoke right now.
Yeah. I think long term he is. There's a personality there that will attract recruits that Brady Hoke.
There's going to be some interesting fallout from this Penn State Ohio State game. If Ohio State wins,
it's going to be crazy.
Then you've got a jumbled mess.
Then it's going to be
Wisconsin, not overly impressive, but they're still there. I mean, they're still undefeated. Yep. TCU.
I don't think TCU's up there at the end.
You get a half win against Kansas. Kansas is so dreadful.
They have 21 yards of offense in the game.
So bad.
All right, so here it goes back to this question. You have a chance for TCU to go undefeated. Mm-hmm. Still have a chance for Miami to go undefeated.
I don't think they will, but they do.
I don't think they do either, but they have a chance to go undefeated. You still have a chance for either Wisconsin or Penn State to go undefeated.
South Florida or Central Florida.
Yeah, I did.
UCF will beat South Florida by three touchdowns.
Why can't they go undefeated, though?
They can.
They can go undefeated. They're not going to be in the conversation.
Agreed. I would agree with that.
Right or wrong. If we go back to this whole Georgia-Alabama undefeated.
Yeah.
Does a one loss get in over an undefeated?
I think a interesting team to watch, too, playing really well at Notre Dame.
Notre Dame is absolutely.
How about Sam Darnold is going from a number one draft pick to probably going to go back to school next year?
Every time
I've watched that guy live, he's terrible.
He's been awful. He's been
I've not seen one good game live where he's played well.
I agree.
And another one that hung on the road to keep their hopes is Oklahoma's dropped, but they're still beaten.
They need a lot of help.
They do, but I mean, if they
you're right,
win
there's
out,
a tiebreaker with them in Ohio State. It's hard not to say they would beat Ohio State at Ohio. It's not they didn't beat them on a neutral. Beat them at their place.
Say they come out and they beat Oklahoma State by 4 touchdowns and make a statement like that, and then you win the Big 12.
Yeah, I think they're still in the conversation. There's no doubt.
It's going to be it's going to be interesting to watch this unfold here.
And that's why I love college football, because every week, I mean, you can pick out now 4 to 5 games with national implication. I mean, obviously Ohio State, Penn State at the top of the list, but there are still others where you look at those teams and say, hey, should they slip up?
Right.
I mean, even Oklahoma, you know, needed to rally and to beat at Kansas. It's not easy to win on the road.
The defense is so bad.
It is bad.
I got the Bearcats winning out, playing Kentucky in a bowl game.
About that, in the Liberty Bowl?
Well, the Liberty Bowl.
Let me tell you this, just for the record, UC ain't winning out. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, UC better worry about winning one or two more, honestly, with this bad.
I actually predicted 4-8 before the year started.
All right, and Butch Jones comes to Lexington.
I was talking to a couple people yesterday. They think he lasts the season. But I said, let's just say Kentucky just hammers. Let's say they beat him 31-7. Pick a score. Nothing of a hammer job. How do you, on a team that's only beaten you one time since 1984, if they hammer you with a coach that's already on the way, how do you let him finish out?
Because the only reason I think you do is I don't know what you gain by getting. I mean, you send a message that this is unacceptable.
I think
trust
that's
me,
the message
UT
that you need
knows
to send.
That. Fans of Tennessee, every game has been almost unacceptable.
I don't know, man.
All right, so there you have it. College football is in the books. We've still got to go. Our NFL discussion, where the Bengals are the Bengals. And Pittsburgh, once again, is Pittsburgh. It's not much you can – I don't know why everybody's getting
worked
up about
this. That was
pretty sad.
That was really good analysis.
Well, because they are. I don't know why people are worked up. There's no reason to be worked up and debate all this crap. I'll tell you in 60 seconds. I'll tell you exactly what it is. And lots going on in high school football.
Yes.
Final week of the regular season. We do have guests. Joe Idle from joeidle.com. Talk a little playoffs. And Tom Grippa. What a turnaround with the Milford Eagles. They'll be our special guests. All that more to come. Don't go anywhere. Check us out. We're the Angry Quarterbacks. We're the two angry guys. I'm Tom Gamble. He's Richard Skinner. And a legitimate quarterback.
Legit.
One Tony Pike.
Angry.
From your friends at ESP Media. Welcome to the ESP Media Studios here in Kenwood, north of downtown Cincinnati. Talked a little college football, and now it's time to talk a little high school. We are the Angry Quarterbacks. I'm Tom Gamble from In-Game Sports. He's Richard Skinner from Local12.com, and a legitimate quarterback who's on the fence waiting to see if his Reading Blue Devils qualify.
He's really pensive about
for
this.
For the postseason. But first and foremost, we had the only two schools I know about in Southeast Indiana, They were victorious.
Yes, they were.
Last Friday, and they move on to the second round of the Indiana State playoffs. And we've also
got East Central and Lawrenceburg.
That'll be East Central and Lawrenceburg, both winning. Yes, we'll get to them a little later. And Northern Kentucky.
Oldenburg Academy lost to Try.
Did it now.
Yeah.
Try?
Try.
All right. Is that T-R-I?
It is T-R-I.
Try high.
There's more of that, though, isn't it? Just try.
Just try.
All right. Well,
try
they
high.
Tried. They did.
Try high.
Kentucky, it's the final week as well, and virtually everybody makes the postseason. But school like Covcat trying to wrap up a perfect regular season, if you will.
And I believe they will.
And there's plenty going on in Ohio, and some of it a little bit difficult, shall we say, to understand mathematically. Mm-hmm. So we figured we'll check in with Joe Idle of joeidle.com and see what he's got to say going into the final week of the regular season. All right, it's our pleasure to welcome in Joe Idle from joeidle.com, who spends probably tons of time reviewing the Harbin computer ratings and is very accurate, comes out every week. And as we head into the final week of the regular season, let's find out where the locals stand. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. This time of year is always exciting, and I know it's probably the same for you. And let's start in Division One, Region 8, where St. Xavier, Colerain, and Milford appear to be locks for the postseason, but everybody else kind of up for grabs. That's correct?
That's right. Sycamore, Mason, Elder, Moeller, West Carolina, everyone, even Lakota East, Fairfield, kind of up for grabs those last five spots, rather.
So basically, those teams, I'm surmising, control their own destiny. It looks like the Lakota East-Mason game is one that has a lot of implications for some of the other schools, too. Is that correct?
That's right. Since Mason and Lakota East, someone has to lose that game. So that'll kind of clear the path for at least one of the spots, and it gives the other team, you know, one less team they'll have to worry about as long as they take care of their own game.
So Mason, Lakota East, the loser of that game is eliminated. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't say that. if Lakota East loses, yes, they're eliminated. If Mason loses, well, then you know, Elder could lose, Moeller could lose, West Claremont could lose. So Mason could still get in with the loss.
Okay, so it sounds like one of those Friday nights where there's going to be a lot of computation up until the final hour. Correct? Just depending on how everything shakes out.
That's exactly right. Each and every one of these games is going to have some impact, and the seeds could completely shuffle around.
Now, Elder and Moeller, do they need to win to guarantee? I presume they control their own destiny, so that means if Elder plays at LaSalle and Moeller's on the road against Winton Woods, if they each win, are they likely in?
Yes, based on the numbers I have right now, Elder and Moeller will both be in with wins.
Okay, and who has the best?
Should either of them lose, they could still get in. Most likely, you know, if, say, Lakota East loses and West Coast loses, as an example, then Elder and Moeller could still get in, even with losses.
Okay, I'm talking to Joe Idle, joeidle.com. And Joe, let's look at Region 8, where obviously LaSalle, Anderson, and Winton Woods locks, correct?
That's correct. And even Dayton-Belmont, I believe, is a lock as well in that region.
Yeah, they are. All right, so Harrison is sitting at number 6, Edgewood at number 8. Those are both greater Cincinnati area schools. They each, well, Edgewood does not control its own destiny, but can they still, what needs to happen for Harrison, I presume, if they win, they host Northwest, they would be in, and then Edgewood, what needs to happen for Edgewood to make the postseason?
Edgewood's in a position where they need to win to keep their chances alive, but they can be jumped from behind by a team like Chillicothe, who has a one-loss Jackson team on their schedule. So if Chillicothe gets that win, they'll jump ahead of Edgewood, which means Edgewood would then need perhaps a loss by Troy to still have a shot to get into that last spot.
Joe, I'd be remiss if I didn't
ask.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Region 20. Tony Pike, the former Reading alum, wants to know the chance of the Blue Devils. What needs to happen for Reading to get in the playoffs?
Well, that one's a little trickier. Reading, they're playing 0-9 Finney Town, so there's not really going to be much room for them to move up any. They could be passed from behind by Brookville, maybe Carlisle, but I don't know the likelihood of that. If Brooksville beats Franklin, that could be bad news for Reading. But if Franklin wins, Reading could probably have a very good shot of holding on to that spot.
All right, Joey, appreciate it. I got to ask you one final quick question. How in the name of – how'd you get involved with this? What made you decide to – because I'm sure this takes a lot of – do you have a math, statistical-type background?
My background's in computer programming. I have a pretty strong math background as well. It was more an accident, really. I needed some programming project to kind of keep my skills sharp a long time ago, and I've always been – following the playoff system, and it just kind of, it made sense. That was a good problem for me to try to tackle, and kind of took off from there.
All right, well, you do a hell of a job. You're spot on. We appreciate your time this morning, and enjoy the rest of the final week of the regular season.
All right, you guys do the same. I appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, Joe Idol from joeidol.com. Okay, I'm not going to lie. I know he's the guru of this, but I'm still a little bit confused. At least with Region 4, because I think...
Well, because there's a lot of ifs.
There's a lot to go on.
That's just it. There's a lot of ifs. And the biggest part to me is if Elder and Moeller lose, and it's a possibility for both, it's still very confusing whether either or makes it and how that shakes down. And then if it does shake down like that, let's say an Elder finishes at 6 or a Moeller finishes at 6, For a Milford at 3, I mean, it's not exactly a gift.
No, but I would tell you, there are, according to Joe, there are 10 schools still alive for eight spots.
That is correct. But Fairfield, which is in the playoffs technically today at 8, does not control its own destiny.
No, but I think...
And neither does West Claremont.
No, but I think...
Or neither does
West Claremont if they beat Milford. They beat,
yeah. But I think two games, I think that East hosting Mason.
That's a big one.
East has to win. If East loses, they're out. So now you're down to 9 for 8.
And West Claremont,
if they lose at Milford...
Then you're down to 8.
Then the 8. So the 8 right now are St. Xavier, Coleraine, Milford, Sycamore.
And this is in order.
In order. Followed by Mason, Elder, Moeller, Fairfield. So really it's Mason East and West Claremont Milford that will determine the fate of the 10 for 8 spots. Now, who would have thought last week, St. Xavier, and it's very difficult to go undefeated. I mean, let's be honest. In Ohio, there are now in Greater Cincinnati, no D1 teams undefeated.
But you, I know you watched the game. I did not. I was driving to Pittsburgh.
I didn't get a chance to watch the entire game.
To see it. But honestly, it sounded like they just didn't play very well, St. Xavier.
They didn't. They couldn't get anything untracked offensively. I mean, they were unable to run the ball. I mean, they averaged.
I was going to say, I didn't see the game, but when I looked up the stats and saw how many pass attempts Chase had, I think
it was 19 of 43.
Right.
And this is a guy
comes out right away.
Right. Well, and this is a guy completing nearly 70% of the passes. Couldn't get anything going in the run game and honestly just fell behind. And let's not kid ourselves, St. Ignatius is still good.
Well, no, I mean,
really good.
Well, they're good. And I think coming off that loss to Moeller gets them locked in even more. But I think. As bad as it sounds, I think for St. X, a loss probably is a good scenario there.
I agree
because
with that.
Because now Coach Speck does not have to worry about finding ways to motivate his guys. Because it can get to a point, especially in high school, you start seeing these national rankings and you start reading your press clippings a little bit. That right there brings that team back to reality and say, hey, we got to go to work this week.
Well, and they've
we
got to
get ourselves going ready.
It's not a gimme at Louisville, St. X.
Yep.
No, but I think they bounce back nicely.
I do too. But I mean, that's a good test leading into the postseason where they're going to be the number one seed in Region 4. They've already locked up and host.
Yeah, correct.
Before it all gets rolling.
I just think when you look at what could happen, but depending this week, if you get a St. X, say, Elder rematch with how well Elder played them, or, it's always a knockdown dragout. And then you look at Milford. Who's a 3, if West Claremont beats them and they drop, all of a sudden you're Milford and you're going from hosting to, hey, go see Coleraine or St. X in the first.
Right, huge difference.
I mean, that's huge difference. It comes down to 1 week, but this week is so big for high school sports and trying to position yourself.
Well, and just how difficult is it to be undefeated? Anderson was, they lost by 1 at home to Milford. So now you have in Cincinnati, Goshen, Wyoming, Bethel Tate. I mean, those are your 3 unbeatens. In Dayton, you have Trotwood Madison, a very good team, in Valley View. I mean, those are – so, I mean
– In Valley View, you beat the daylights out of Franklin, so that tells me Valley View is really good.
But it shows you how difficult – now, if you're looking in Division I, St. Ignatius, which plays at St. Edward this week, So they are still number one in Region 1. In Region 2, Toledo, Whitmer, they're undefeated. And Centerville, which won again, they're 8-1. They are in Region 3. So it should be very interesting. I mean, and now it'll be interesting to see what does Anderson do. I mean, right. You know, they were 8-0. Now suddenly they had a lead, a double-digit lead. They lose a close one at home to Milford. Likely they don't control their destiny in the ECC. It'll be interesting to see how the Redskins rebound.
Yeah, and they have not clinched a home playoff game. They're in a very good place
they
to
are.
Get one, even with a loss, but they haven't clinched that either. So, they still have something to play for.
Sure, LaSalle, Anderson, and Wynton Woods still holding down, which they pretty much held down all season, yeah. The top three spots. But they all have, LaSalle hosts Elder, and then Wynton Woods hosts Moeller. So Wynton Woods going to try to finish 2-1 in the GCL South. Of course, they didn't play St. X.
And their only loss would be one where they wang the upright on an extra point in overtime. That's a pretty good year. That's a good team.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the Division II second round and then whatever the regional championship game would be between LaSalle, Wynton Woods, Anderson, LaSalle should be really, really good.
And for anyone unfamiliar with the way the playoff system works in Ohio, top eight in each region get in, top four host, then they go from
neutral
sites. So
I do want to touch on one thing here. We're going to talk with Tom Grippa here in just a little bit. But I do want to touch on the fact of all these games in every division now being on a Friday night.
You don't like that, do you?
I don't. I know that most people are just going to support their own school or watch their own school. But I think when you get a little deeper in the playoffs, like a second round.
I'll be honest. I used to like going on a Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, if you're just a high school fan and you want to go see a good D1 game on a Friday or good D2 and then flip it up or even a good D5 or whatever, you don't have that opportunity now. Now you have to make a choice. I don't like
it. But you know what? It's all changed. I mean, the Big Ten Conference went to some Friday night games. I know a lot of high school purists didn't like that.
It's similar to basketball, right?
Yes.
I mean, basketball, you can go up in the state playoffs and
Yeah, right.
But and honestly, so if people are unaware of this, and you may say, how are they showing live games on Friday night? Well, the OHSAA decided in weeks 8, 9, and this week 10 to kind of experiment, if you will, and allow Spectrum Sports, which is their official broadcast partner, and you do games. I know you're doing one this week, right? You're doing the Elder LaSalle game,
doing it live.
And doing it live to kind of gauge. I think the thought process has always been that customarily on Friday nights, if you did them live, you would essentially hurt the attendance.
And I get that. And I do understand that.
Yeah. Do you think you would, though?
I don't, other than if it's a bad weather game.
Weather-related, sure.
And somebody says, look, I really want to see this game, but I ain't sitting out
there. But I'm telling you, on a Friday night.
Well, to listen to you.
Oh, no question.
TV.
Right,
Mike,
no doubt.
That's why I'm staying
but
home.
That in itself.
I was
going
to go to the Elder listening, but no, I'm staying home now.
Right, but Elder at LaSalle.
And he's going to come with a sheet going, you are an idiot because of the following things you said.
But Elder at LaSalle, to me, if the weather, if it isn't raining, it isn't horrible, people are going. The LaSalle community, the Elder fans, are going.
I'm going.
Yeah, are you?
That in itself is
can
huge.
You work him? Can he get access at halftime and postgame?
Oh, I'll have Lindsey Patterson interview you at halftime.
There we go.
How big is that?
There you go. Get Tony Pike's thoughts.
That's a big game, though.
I know it is.
Because you got the Wynton Woods Moeller big game, and you're still trying to decipher out so much.
Well, and
I think it's more D1 right now because
I agree.
The Elder and Moeller, you're starting to look up at these top couple teams.
Of who they might have to play.
Who you don't want to see for,
correct.
You're right.
No, yeah, but I'll tell you another one. Top two.
But I'll tell you another one. For LaSalle, this is they've won a couple in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to beat Elder, I mean, they're the three-time defending Division II champs. But I guarantee you, some of those schools this year are saying, we can beat them this year. But if you beat Elder, then suddenly from a confidence standpoint for Pat McLaughlin, I think that would do a ton for the Lancers.
Elder and the rest of the GCL is like, but we're tired of hearing about LaSalle.
Absolutely.
And the D2 team that beats the D1 team. I mean, there's so much going into it this week that there's nothing better than this time of the year with football.
Yeah, this is a really good week.
Well, and certainly one of the best stories of the entire season is what the Milford Eagles have done. I mean, Milford 8-1, now getting ready to host West Claremont. They win at Anderson 41-40. They're in the playoffs with the chance to win the ECC outright and host a first-round playoff game. And you got to go back 31 years for the last time Milford was in the postseason. And the man who's responsible for that turnaround is first-year Eagles coach Tom Grippa. It's my pleasure to welcome in Tom Grippa, head coach of the resurgent Milford Eagles, who are 8-1 coming off a big road win at Anderson, have an opportunity this Friday to wrap up the ECC title when the Eagles host West Claremont. Tom, congratulations, first of all, on the 8-1 start.
Thanks. It's been
it's been a great journey, and I love our kids and working really hard.
Tom, let me take you back to when you took over this Milford program. Obviously, they're coming off a 2-8 year, and I know they felt like they were close. I know they expected to be better last year, but take me back to when you took over the program, when you first addressed this team, and honestly, what you thought this team was going to be capable of going into the 2017 season.
Honestly, Tom, I wasn't sure what we were capable of. You know, it hasn't just been a 2-8 season. The whole community, the whole program has been beat down by everybody, including their own. And they've had two winning seasons in 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's not 2000, back when Zach Streif was playing here, and they went 6-4. And then in 1986, they went 9-1. And made the playoffs. That's the last time they've been a playoff team. That's 31 years ago. So to have so few winning seasons and for such a long stretch is almost, you know, inconceivable. And so I wasn't sure. But I took the job knowing that I had a big challenge. I figured it would be my last rodeo, and I'm like, went in, gave it 110% in the off season, and trained these kids. And I found out they're really hungry and they really want to win. I have some kids too. I mean, we're not terrible. We have some good players on our football team. I think 10 to 12 seniors that can go play college football. Not at Ohio State, of course, but they can play college football somewhere. Division 3, Division 2, maybe Blake King and Bryce Dugan, 1AA. I think we have some guys. And so I don't know what's happened in the past. You know, this is totally foreign to me, Tom. I mean, I get off Wolf Penn Pleasant or 28 or 131, and I'm totally lost. So, you know, I'm on the other side of the world.
Right. Well, sure. And I want to ask you, because for those who don't know, I mean, you spent 9 very successful years at Elder. Then you went on to Fairfield, where you enjoyed success. LaSalle, most recently as the offensive coordinator at Mount St. Joseph University. And I would ask you, I mean, obviously, all of those were essentially programs that won. So this had to be new for you, trying to turn around a program like Milford. And how important was it, Tom, when you took over to get to the psyche, to have the mental? You obviously had to find out that you had some players good enough to enable you to win. But how much of it for you initially? Because I know from having talked to you all those years, you're a positive guy. I mean, you always think that the team you've got is going to have a chance to do well. How much was it, though, of you convincing them that they could be that type of team?
Well, I had to talk to them every day. And as you recall, all those schools you mentioned, they were losing programs when I took over. Elder had terrible football. They were struggling for, you know, 3 or 4 years before I took over. LaSalle was the bottom dweller in the DCL forever. And Fairfield had 4 straight losing seasons. And so I can do that. I can build a program. I know what it takes. And first thing you got to do is you have to make them tough mentally. And how do you do that? You do it by training in the weight room. Because you find out who's mentally tough. The kids that can fight through tough sets and tough reps. And, you know, once you make them hard physically, then they become hard mentally and able to withstand that, you know, what happened Friday night. And we've been in close games, you know, more once. And we're used to being playing from behind. So when we were down at one point, 28-7, and it's like, oh, no, you know, and everybody tells me, you know, in the past that Milford teams, that final score would have been 52-7. But this team is different. It's because of how we trained. We distill in them that it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. We keep grinding and working hard. And that's what we did Friday night. And,
sure.
You know, I think that'll be the theme and that's the theme for all my teams. You know, you see my team play. Even when we were just have average teams, we compete with the very best. And, you know, and the ECC is a good conference. It's not the GPL, it's not the GMC, but it's a good conference. And, you know, I think I'm going to enjoy a lot of success here.
Talking to Tom Grippa, head coach of the 8-1 Milford Eagles. They host West Claremont on Friday night. Projections say that they're already in the Division I Region 4 state playoffs after winning just two games last year. And when you talk about those 31 years, it's been a long time in Milford. But let me ask you this, Tom. You go back to week one. You're at Oak Hills. You win that game 42-39. You obviously have had some other games, but was that how much did that game mean something to getting off on the right foot? Then a couple weeks later, you drop your only game to Fairmont. Since then, you haven't lost. But was that week one game a catalyst for what's now been 8 wins in 9 games?
That was huge because we were dominating the game the whole game, and then they come roaring back with a great passing game that they have and took the lead. And you know, then we drove down with, we had 5 minutes on the clock. We drove down methodically and scored with 13 seconds left. Cameron Kells got the winning touchdown. Ironically, his dad was one of the players on that 86 team, and Cameron got the game-winning touchdown Friday night. So it was huge, though. It just gave us belief. And so we're in a good place right now at Milford. Our football program is in a good place. We have confidence. We know that we have a tough game this week, though. I mean, West Claremont has got everything to gain. I mean, they beat us. They're a playoff team. They're going to get a share of the ECC title. And, you know, for us, that would be really disappointing. We're in the playoffs, but we're probably, I'm sure, we're a road team then. And, you know, it's huge to be at home in a playoff game. I think that's important to have that. Our community deserves that, so we're going to go out and play really well this Friday.
Tom, one final question. Be honest with me. When you go back to taking this job, and like you mentioned earlier, not knowing a whole heck of a lot, if somebody had said you'd be 8-1 with this home game against West Claremont to win the ECC outright and to host the first-round playoff game, might you then have said, hold on a minute, you might be crazy?
Yeah, I think we would have. I think we would have said that. But it's been a great journey, and I tell anybody that wants to hear it, that win Friday night was as huge as the win that we had in 1988 at Elmore High School against Mahler to break their 16-year stranglehold on the GCL. And you know, same emotion, same feeling from not only the coaching staff and players, but from the community and the fans storming the field, and you know, they're chanting, and you know, all the cool things are happening. You know, King's Court, you know, that's Blake King. He's my quarterback, and, you know, Blake's one of the best players in the city. And, you know, kids come to the game and they're with their hats on, their crown, the King crown on. And it's been really cool to see. And the community is loving it, and we don't want it to end. So we're going to keep rolling.
All right. Well, Tom, well, certainly congratulations on the 8-1. Best of luck on Friday night against West Claremont, and we will see you in the postseason.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. This opportunity.
All right. Tom Grippa, head coach of the Milford Eagles. Thanks, Tom. I'll talk to you soon, man. What a job Tom Grippa has done. And I think you heard some brutal honesty there about, you know, taking over. He really didn't know what to expect. And I will guarantee you, anybody in that
there's no way he expected 8-1 and a chance to host a playoff game.
I mean, he said he didn't know what to expect. And I can tell you, because Josh Kaufman, their principal, Mark Trout, their athletic director, it's a great community. I mean, Milford really is. And honestly, football, they are very successful athletically. Right. Football's kind of been the one that they just couldn't get that bus turned around. And you know, when you look at the success Tom had at Elder, then on to Fairfield, then at LaSalle, most recently was the offensive coordinator at Mount St. Joseph. But, you know, I get, as it turns out, I mean, maybe that lineage and maybe his ability to get – because I can tell you, he always was an optimist. He would always tell you, I think this is a really good team. Here's why.
We got a chance. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, he's done that with Milford in 1 year.
There was a little self-aggrandizing there about him turning programs around. But truth be told, if you look
when he took
all those programs over, it's absolutely accurate. I mean, what he was able to do.
Yeah.
It just shows amazing stuff with when you get kids at that level to start buying in and believing. Because when you go so many years in a row where you don't make the playoffs or don't win, it just becomes kind of the culture around the school.
Well,
when you change that. And then everyone starts believing, and that momentum comes, and then you get confidence, Yep. It's crazy how well you can start playing.
I just want to know about King's Court.
King's Court, maybe. Well, and I will tell you this.
That was like Pike's Peak at Reading.
I'll bet it was.
But you
I'll
know how it is. If you're on a team that is not winning, when things start to go bad, yep. you expect
the
worst.
Here we go again. Yep.
It is, and I will tell you, we're hosting a pep rally at the Milford Skyline Chili on Lila Avenue next Wednesday, November the 1st, as they head into the playoffs. I mean, we've done it the last couple of years. They came to me and said, can we do it again? And this year, obviously, you can imagine.
And I can only imagine what the community turnout was going to be. You need to find out about King's Court while you're there.
I will find out about King's Court. Yes, and they'll be there. I need to interview King.
See, it's a they, apparently. It's a they. What's a
court? So there you go. Now,
wait a minute. I want to go back. Yeah. What was in Pike's Peak? What entailed that? Was that like a harem?
I think he just made that up.
Is it like a harem?
I don't think there was such a thing.
The student section created more of a mountain type in the stands.
Gotcha. I like that.
At the peak after every touchdown pass.
And let me tell you, if you believe that, the Bengals are going to win the division and win a postseason game.
Let him have his moment. Why? Why do you got to
I'm calling him
on?
Out on that. It's okay. He had a good enough career. He didn't need Pike's Peak at Reading.
You've thought about that for a long time, though, haven't you? You wanted something like that, didn't you?
Disappointed it never happened.
Very, I know.
See, there you go. Reality comes out. Now, in Northern Kentucky, big game last week. And how about the performance by one Jake Chisholm of Ryle? Are you kidding
42
me?
42 carries for 466.
Which
466.
And six touchdowns.
I didn't know running backs are allowed to touch it more than 10 times in a
game. They're not. Seven's the max.
Oh, okay.
Most of the times.
In the three-man rotation.
Yeah, yes. I mean,
right.
That's crazy. That yeah, but 42.
But I tell you, Ryle, I mean, don't forget, they lost a Covcalf way back in week zero.
Which, really look back on it, you just realize this. That's how good Covcalf really is.
And then they lost when they couldn't get in from the inch line. Many think they did, but they didn't against Indianapolis Cathedral in a game nationally televised. So those are only two defeats. So Ryle's having another good year. Now, I picked out some games for this week.
Okay.
You can tell me what you think. Newport Central Catholic and Beachwood. It's the typical. Beachwood is good.
This is not a good new Cath team.
No, but they're still 5-4 and still can make a postseason run, correct?
They could, although they'll have to probably get through Lloyd again, which beat them 46-14. But I've watched that before. They can bounce them back from that. I don't think they beat Beachwood.
But
this
Beachwood
week,
in Class A, the defending state champion. I mean, their only losses are to Covenant Catholic and Simon Kent.
Correct, and they were in the Simon Kent game.
Correct. Covcath looking to make it a 10-0 regular season, still take momentum into the postseason. At Campbell County, Campbell County is 6-3.
They are, and they got a nice running back in Alex Dowd.
They do. Covcath is just ridiculous.
Covcath is stupid good.
They are good. And Ludlow, now they get back on a winning track.
8-1.
Your retirement community, 8-1, but they have to go to 8-1 Paris.
Paris is pretty good. Paris is pretty good. Yeah, that's going to be tough. All right.
And Simon Kenton obviously finished 9-1 regular season. They have a bye this week.
There's a handful of teams that do have buys this week.
Sure. And how about Cooper? Two in a row, baby.
I will say
21-20 at Connor.
Did you play on a losing team at Reading, just out of curiosity?
No.
Did not. Because you were so good at Pike's Peak, was just rolling at that time.
Right.
I do admire teams that are struggling like they were with a record and still keep plugging away at it.
Unaccustomed to struggling like this.
Correct.
I mean,
think about it. You're coming out for practice in week 9, which really is longer than that because you've had 5 or 6 preseason weeks. You haven't won a game. Half the time you're getting your tail kicked in. And to keep plugging away, as hokey as it sounds, I mean, sometimes that's what sports is about, is you just got to keep on keeping on. Man.
It's resolve, man. I mean, it can't
always be the Reddings of the world.
You know what
you're just better than everybody.
True.
You know what it does? It teaches you life's lessons.
It does.
Because you're not always going to win.
You're not.
Which goes to coaching. If you're able to instill that at the high school level.
But Tony, I'll be honest with you.
Freshmen through seniors.
I don't see how guys, and I give them credit, when you know in your heart of hearts you're going to get drugged.
Yes.
And you still have to try and game plan.
And that's why I'm glad I never was on a team, because I don't know how you could react and prepare.
Yeah.
Like when you're watching game film, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Wow. They're better. They're going to kick our butt.
Well, in Southeast Indiana, the two schools we pay attention to here, in 3A, Lawrenceburg was a 33-14 winner over Brownstown Central. So now they're 9-1. They've won 9 in a row after the 15-14 loss to East Central. They host Greensburg, second round. Of course, they made it to the state final last year.
Correct.
And East Central, they won over Edgewood, the Indiana Edgewood, 48-6.
I think they have to go on the road, don't they?
Yeah, they play South Dearborn.
Yeah.
This week, and they've won 6 of their last 7. So, and they made it to the semis of 4A last year, the state final the year before. So good luck to those Southeast Indiana, too.
Very good.
And what again? Who lost? Oldenburg
Academy lost to Try.
All right, so there you have it. High school football, final week of the regular season in Kentucky and Ohio. State playoffs continue in Indiana. Good luck to everybody out there, and we'll know who's in when we talk next week. And
we talk matchups.
And we still have the NFL segment to go.
You know, we did hear from Joe Idle on Reading. I was really impressed. What do you feel about their chances? Feeling good about that? They're going to win, right?
Reading.
They're winning.
Reading, my sophomore year with Deshaun Wynn, beat Brookville on a hook and ladder play.
I remember that. Play of the game. I remember that. Yeah.
And now Brookville holds the key to Reading.
That comes around, Tony.
Well, I feel that's the only part of the Ohio. I feel bad for when you're mathematically looking and checking and figuring and that control. But I mean,
you had other weeks to control your destiny.
No, I have no issue with it.
Ask for help.
Well, I'll tell you what. And for those who don't like the Ohio high school system,
I
ask you to
do
two things. Look at Indiana scores from last week. Look at Kentucky scores from this coming week. You won't bitch about
this coming week, the week after.
First week of the playoffs. Because they will be dreadful.
It'll be awful.
All right, there you have it. 60 seconds. I'm going to tell you to start the NFL segment why the Bengals are the Bengals and the Steelers are the Steelers. That coming next.
Different uniforms?
It's from your friends right here.
It's just another segment.
People worry about this stuff or get worried, I don't know. They're idiots. From your friends at ESPN.
It's NFL week.
Yes, it is. Colts week, and I can barely contain myself. Welcome in to the NFL segment of the Angry Quarterbacks.
Jacoby Brissett.
We are the two angry guys. I'm Tom Gamble. He's Richard Skinner. And the legitimate quarterback, one Tony Pike. Now, I didn't ask this in the previous two. So if I go to local12.com, where you're the digital guy, what do I find
I'm
right now?
I'm the digital guy. Yes, I am. You will find some Bengals coverage from the weekend. You'll see some Lavontez Burfict and Le'Veon Bell fall out. You'll see high school football polls. You'll see the local 12, top 12 will be up there by the time you see this.
I wonder if I should try to guess that today. It's wrong segment, but what the hell?
You can try.
I will. Not now, though. I got to get my 60 seconds in.
Okay.
Of why,
I'm writing a column on why it's time for the Bengals to turn Joe Mixon loose. Enough is enough is enough.
I would write a column on why it's time to turn Marvin Lewis loose, but that's a whole other story. So,
you want your 60 seconds?
Here we go.
Go. 59, 58.
I don't need that. That distracts me. So, here's what I would tell you. I just am amazed at how worked up and I get passion as sports fans, but there should be no passion necessary to understand why on Sunday, what happened at Heinz Field, where Pittsburgh, were it not for an ass clown of an offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, would have won by 30 points.
Wait, what did you not like that he didn't?
Oh, my God. Those plays on less than a yard. What the hell is that?
Well, the play before the half, I think Tomlin screwed that up with a timeout.
Maybe, but you're diverting off of what I'm doing
here.
Please,
I'm just trying to give you logic. I know. I'll let you
Well, this is logic.
Go ahead.
So, as a Bengals fan, what did you expect differently? You have a coach who treats this critical game, like it's just another, who instills no leadership whatsoever in his football team, who is – never caught John Ross had a hell of a game, and I'd like this Joe Mixon. I mean, just let me go.
Corey Dillon will be here in a minute,
and
then
he might. I'd take him because he'd run with some purpose. Now,
all right,
Mike Tomlin, he doesn't treat it like just another game. His, you can see him on the sideline, and that gets ingrained in those players. And at the end of the day,
they own him.
They do.
But
you can change that.
Right, but you saw from the first, Pittsburgh won the toss. Every team deferred. They said, no, we want the ball.
Right. Yep.
We're going to come out and make a statement right away.
With an offense that, let's face it, wasn't great in Kansas City, was awful last home game.
But you saw in the first drive who, during the week, this game meant more to. Pittsburgh was ready. Like Geno Atkins, you'll never see Geno play a game where he's non-existent like that again.
But it
was just another game.
And Vontaze was not.
When you don't put anything on it, it's just another week.
Tony, two things for me. Marvin Lewis, simply put, has proven time and time and year again, he can't be a true leader of this team. And the other piece, and you're the QB, Andy Dalton, simply in big games, when crunch time comes, can't make the plays.
Well, there were so many parts to this game that I'll probably just be all over the place while I talk about
that's
it.
That's okay.
Here.
I just did.
When you look at the second half, and what happened in the first half, first of all, Joe Mixon had 48 yards on 7 carries. He probably should have had 15 yards.
Correct.
He's that good.
The 25-yard run was a great
cutback.
He's that
good.
The 17-yard run was actually well blocked.
Right.
The one that took it down.
But
that was actually
he's that good.
But
he can make plays.
He can make a play.
Yes.
So, Lazor comes out and says, well, we had too many three and out. You know what stops a three and out? Giving it to a back that can get 5 or 6 yards on first down. Because like Tony Romo said in the game, this offense can't compete and they can't survive on 3rd and 9 and
Correct.
3rd and 10.
Because you have one playmaker. You
right.
have one, and guess what Pittsburgh did? Pittsburgh, after the first quarter, A.J. Green had three catches for 42 yards, and they decided, you know what, we're rolling a safety that way every single time. You're not throwing the ball to him again.
Here's the problem.
You're just not.
Pittsburgh, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown had 48 targets in that game. Joe Mixon and A.J. Green had 16. So when you look at coming into the game, who's your two big guys?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
who's your only two guys?
And Pittsburgh has said the last 2 weeks now, look, Le'Veon Bell, you want to be the highest paid running back? Here's 32 and 35 carries.
And I will tell you, and Tony, you were obviously way closer to the NFL than I ever was on the field. For a running back in back-to-back weeks to carry 67 times.
In today's NFL?
In today's NFL is staggering.
Yep.
But obviously, he wants the workload. They're more than willing to give him the workload. And
but
if you look, his numbers weren't great.
No, 3.8 a carry.
Right, and a 15-yard run was his longest one, but it was constant.
Made some plays catching the ball.
Yes, he made a couple big plays catching the ball.
Now, subsequently, on the other side of that, when you come out and you give Joe Mixon 7 touches, and then you want to patronize him after the game, because all he did, he went into the locker room and he saw the same stat sheet we see, and he sees Le'Veon Bell, 30-plus carries. 3.8 yards. Well, I have 6.9 yards of carry. I got the ball 7 times.
None in the second
and
half.
And I say,
zero
why?
Carries in the
why?
Second half.
Why? How? Why?
Yeah. Like, how can you not come out right away and say, hey, this worked. We're going to keep pounding the rock here because we're in the game. It's a 6-point game at halftime.
Correct.
And you get the ball first. So come out and make a statement. We don't do that. We don't make the adjustments. And then it turns into what I'm going to say. I don't care what offensive line you have. If you're down 15, every offensive line is not going to look great.
No, they're not.
But for Andy Dalton on 4th and 2, with three and a half minutes left,
I don't understand.
You're still in the game. He rolls out. You have two options: fit a ball in, or try to fit a ball in, or tuck the ball and try to run and get 2 yards.
Well, if you
because either way, either of those things happen, we're not even talking about that today.
But let me ask you a question about Andy Dalton that puzzles me. You can watch him sometimes in the first half, and he's fitting balls in, and you're like, wow. What happens to the guy?
It's not what happened. This is where everybody's so wrong. And you can tell me I'm wrong, but you played quarterback. I'm going to put you in Andy Dalton's scenario. You see the fact that there's no way I can get a ball to A.J. Green right now. I just can't do it. They're taking it away. So I got to have somebody else win a one-on-one. And when other guys aren't capable of doing that, where do you go with the football?
I still try to fit in there. Because
I do on fourth down. Hang on. On fourth down, I do. On 4th and 2, you got to make a play.
But he tried to fit a ball into Josh Malone
which
that shouldn't
stupid,
have been thrown.
And that shouldn't have been thrown.
And the A.J. Green interception, if he waits in the pocket a half
second.
That was
a terrible throw.
That he clears the linebacker and you're on it. But
he tried to fit it in front of him.
He's getting this problem right now where even when he's not pressured, he feels like he is.
He does. There's no.
And he sees
are,
it and you can see the way he throws and he gets rid of it. He gets out of the pocket too early. But to go out, how do you go in the locker room after that and look at your teammates and think that you tried? And you didn't. They went down without a fight. They didn't go down swinging.
That goes back to the leader.
And the answer to Andy yesterday was not very good from Bill Lazor or from Marvin. It was just not very good.
And then
it was not acceptable.
I've never seen a game. My whole life it's been victory formation. We saw a team losing by 15 take a knee.
Yeah, the only
why not say, hey,
and I agree with you.
We need to work on, let's say next week against the Colts, we need to go 40 yards in 30 seconds.
So what was the
reason?
Go work
on it.
And I'm not disagreeing with you. No one's ever said the reason, because it's really not even worth asking the question, because you're not going to get the answer. The only thing I can think of is this. Mike Tomlin chose to take a knee when Pittsburgh was down there, and you're – answer to that is, all right,
well,
thank you for
taking
a knee.
That's like Big Brother, just, yeah.
Right.
Hey,
that's
take
right.
it easy.
No, you're
because
right. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to give you
right.
an answer.
Well, Pittsburgh in the second half basically said, here, we'll do everything to try to make this a game.
Right.
We'll just keep handing the ball
correct.
Off. The problem I have with Dalton, and tell me a time you can ever remember where him and Marvin have a confrontation on the sideline.
Never.
Have you ever seen
that? No, he just goes back to takes his helmet
like
off.
Like Roethlisberger at the end of the half was in Tomlin's face.
Right. Because of the clock management.
Because that was mismanaged.
Correct.
So do you think Roethlisberger goes over and in the course of a game and says, Coach, we need to give Bell the ball?
Yeah.
So as much as you want to talk laser, Andy Dalton should be saying, hey, give Mixon a touch.
No,
we need to get A.J. Green a touch.
Here's the thing. Marvin's answer to it was, I also saw him put a ball on the ground. Yes, he did. Guess what? He put the ball on the ground. He's not a habitual fumbler.
Right.
If he becomes a habitual fumbler,
Marvin's answers were terrible.
As a coach, I
get
it.
Always are.
If you feel like you can't trust him because he fumbles all the time, fine. He fumbled.
Jeremy Hill fumbled in a playoff game, and he's a starter.
Correct. This is not a habitual problem.
Right.
I think some of it is Joe Mixon. It's an interesting thing. There's twofold to this. He's very arrogant. He has a huge ego, and that's good. I think that's a good thing. I think they also are trying to put a thumb on that and say, listen, rookie, slow your roll. Now, here's the only thing I would say back to that. You guys went out on a limb to take
correct.
Him in the second
then
round.
Use him.
Right. Use him.
Well, let me ask you this, though. The Bengals, historically, seem to want to have guys, they're very hesitant to put rookies in there and stick with them and just let them learn.
The only time they really did that, and it worked out, they needed Andy Dalton to play
right.
immediately.
But
they needed A.J. Green to play immediately. What did those two guys do their first 5 years? They went to the playoffs.
So right. you're telling
trust them, it worked out great.
So you're telling me one of Dalton's issues is he really has nobody, which I'm
he
not
doesn't.
Disagreeing.
I mean,
okay, but
it's why you drafted. You're seeing why you drafted John Ross.
Okay,
you really
so
are.
You drafted John Ross. You've got Joe Mixon. Both of whom, correct me if I'm wrong, look like two of the top three playmakers right now that they have.
Well, if you have a problem on first down, throwing the ball to Joe Mixon in the flat is going to get you
option.
7 or 8 yards.
It's a great
so
option.
So then tell me why they don't use both of them.
Well, John Ross can't get on the field because of the knee. Yeah. He'll be on the field this week. He'll get a full practice.
But we choose to throw deep balls to Cody Core, and we choose to try to fit the ball into Josh Malone and Brandon LaFell. Use your horses. Because they're not going to be elite for the next 20 years. Use them while you got them.
I have to go back. I didn't chart all this, and I probably won't bother to chart it. But
you didn't put it in your tape recorder.
I did not.
Either.
But there were a couple of plays where they ran out of shotgun and split back, and the split backs were Geo and Mixon. Yep. I would love to see more of that, because I think those guys in space, the way you're talking about, have a chance to look. Is it going to be a 12-yard pass? No, but could it be a 4 or 5
right.
or six?
Now you're
and
third
there's,
and two.
There's your running game. There,
right.
There's your running game.
My problem is this was the Bengals out of a bye week.
Right.
Where I thought going into the bye, like, man, Bill Lazor's now got a week. Right. He's going to come up with some different scenario. The last 2 weeks, he pounded the ball to Green and Mixon. We're going to come out and we're going to see a different offense. I didn't see any wrinkles.
I saw well,
all
other,
I saw,
other than the flea flicker.
Right.
It was so poorly
well, the flea
executed.
Flicker, Dalton sat in the pocket like it was Max Protect. Like,
Well, this was the most important. I mean, coming off of the two kind of build your confidence wins, this was a game they had to win.
I'm tired, and you're going to see it this week. I'm tired of Dalton playing good against the Browns.
And he will.
He'll play good against
Sunday.
The Colts.
Because the Colts are dreadful.
But what I can't stand as a competitor, as a quarterback, when you look, they flash to him late in the fourth quarter, and him and McCarron are just laughing it up on the sidelines. And it's like, you know, how much does the game matter?
And you were in the locker room after the game, correct?
Yes.
So I know the Pittsburgh columnist, and, you know, there's that.
Yeah, there was some laughing and joking. I think he made a mountain out of a molehill, to be honest with you. I think it would be hard for me to not be in a locker room on a regular basis to go into somebody else's locker room. I even told some beat writers, I said, that was a weird vibe to me. It was a lot looser than what I would have thought, but the generalization was the entire locker room, and it was not. Trust me, A.J. Green was pissed.
Well,
he was legitimately pissed.
Well, but that's
pissed.
Because I think he's the top competitor they have.
But you take on this, and I listened to the press conference yesterday, and I know you don't make much out of it, but starting the press conference, you would have thought this was a 5-1 team. Marvin laughing, happy, joking around with people.
Well, his whole thing, and this got blown out of proportion, too, of him supposedly storming out of a press conference, which he did not. It was absolutely
it just
piss poor reporting.
To the outside,
it
just doesn't seem like when you
see
Dalton on the sideline, you see Marvin laughing, and it's like, what does this matter?
Some of the joking that was going on in the locker room afterward, even me, as I'm making my way through to talking to people, thought, man, this is a little much even for me.
Right.
Like, the thing, a close game, you got
beat down.
The one thing fans do need to understand is you take the loss way more personally than the players do, and that's not to knock the players. It's their job. All they do, their week is spent preparing, then playing, and when it's over, you have to turn the page. As a professional, you have to.
But
as a fan, it's hard to, and I get that.
Right. But to Tom's point, if you lead up the week of it's being a big game,
then
it's going to sting more after a loss.
And it should.
If Pittsburgh lost that game,
it
wouldn't have been a good locker room.
Tony, I guess
you're right.
I guess
you're
the
just,
point
it's
for
eight
me
out
is,
of nine games. You're right. What, did we just
same,
expect it?
The problem is what I see from Marvin Lewis after losses. He's more condescending with the media at times than he is with players and with bad performance.
He continues to back perfect. Yeah, he continues to back Dalton, and then he attacks Mixon a little bit. It's like, I just don't understand.
I agree with you. If you're going to go out on a limb and draft Joe Mixon, why the hell don't you use him
you,
to the fullest extent?
The kid probably shouldn't have popped off. It's not his place. But you know what? I got to tell you, I think
but
the
it wasn't
kid's
like
right.
a give me the damn ball. It was like, hey, I had seven carries and I had 7 yards a carry. I should have touched the ball in the second half.
And he's not wrong.
I just don't know how Tomlin does it, because in Pittsburgh, they've won 8 out of 9, 11 out of 14. Why do you even need to get up for this game anymore?
Yeah.
It should be the Bengals that say, damn, I'm tired of – Ben Roethlisberger's 22-7 against the Bengals.
Right.
I mean, he owns him.
Why? And his numbers aren't good, but he knows ways to win. He makes enough big
plays. He's a winner.
He's not too proud to go to Tomlin and say, hey, give Bell the ball 20 more times.
And it's funny. You look at the last 2 weeks. He's thrown it 25 and I believe 25 times.
But what does that do now? Now you got to bring another safety in
the
box.
Absolutely.
Now Antonio Brown gets loose on some one-on-one stuff.
Division, I mean, Pittsburgh has a chance, in theory,
to take control.
To really control
no
this.
Well, there's
because
no doubt.
The Browns are the Browns.
Baltimore's terrible.
Baltimore's
awful. The wide receivers.
And the Bengals, you still, after they beat Indy, but when you get in that stretch of road games, you don't know what you're going
to
get.
No, the only thing I can equate it to is 20, and this is the only thing I think you have to hang your hat on if you're a Bengals fan. 2014, that season looked like it was not going to be a playoff season. They had a three-game road stretch at New Orleans, at Tampa. And I'm drawing a blank. The other one, Houston. They had three straight road games that looked like all losses. I mean, it looked like you're going to lose three losses in a row. You got after this Colts game, which you don't lose this game. You lose this game, you might as well.
Tennessee looked terrible against Cleveland.
Correct. So you got Jacksonville, Tennessee, Denver.
Denver's awful.
You have three. You have a chance, but until you do it, I can't argue with anybody who says this is not a playoff caliber team, because it's not shown that it is.
Well, the whole pace of the NFL right now, it's like all of a sudden Pittsburgh now beating Kansas City and us, now they look like one
Correct.
Of the favorites.
Well, in the AFC, it's suddenly New England again and Pittsburgh.
Right.
I mean, really, since Kansas City's dropped a couple games.
I think it's those three. I think it's Kansas City, Pittsburgh,
Kansas City
and New England.
Kansas City's one play away from being 6-1.
Correct.
The NFC is just a.
How about Atlanta?
Right,
I can't buy into Philly. I love what Carson Wentz has done, and
I'll tell you
watch
what,
him Monday
good,
night.
Though.
That's the first time I've watched him, because I saw him last year when they came and played the Bengals.
He's
and
very
I thought he
good.
Was, I thought he was in way over his head. Last night or Monday night, as we're taping this, he made some big time plays,
and he's having a great year. I mean, I'm with you though. Do you really think Philly in the postseason?
Right. No, I do not.
And I know people
I'm still
point,
going with Seattle.
Nah, the only thing I don't understand, the Dallas situation, at some point Elliott's going to get suspended.
Correct.
So why not just take it now?
I'm with
you.
You
didn't have him around when you need
him
most.
Here's the thing, Tony.
Because
if
of how bad the division is. Like, take it now.
If you look back at the first – if he'd have gotten suspended for his first six games, if he'd taken those first six games, they would probably, record-wise, be exactly where they are
right now.
Exactly. You would have been better served just take it and move on.
And I'll throw one out there for you.
All right.
How about the Rams?
They're more legit week to week.
Todd Gurley, Goff has played pretty well.
Goff's played great.
I have them in the Philly category. Until I see more, I just can't.
Which is understandable with the way they've been, but you got to give Sean McVay, you got to give the coach a hell of a lot of credit.
But it looked like the week before Arizona had turned the corner a little bit, and I know Carson broke his arm in that game, but it looked like they turned the corner. Peterson gave him a running game.
England's getting some great games.
How about this week?
They got the Browns.
And hey, how about the job Mike Zimmer and the Vikings? If somehow
I like
way.
I do like them.
Defensively, they're awful good. If you could get, they now can run
their
the ball a little bit with Murray,
Treadwell, right? And Diggs and Thielen.
If there's any way, Bridge. If there's any way, you root for that guy. Yeah. I don't know whether
is it,
he can.
What is
but
it?
So
London saw Jacksonville, Baltimore,
44-7.
They saw Miami was over there.
That was a shutout. That was 20-0.
And then last week they saw
33-0.
Yeah, and now they get to see the Browns,
which will be 31-0.
Bring football to London.
Wow, you damn well know they're going that our football is still better than what
they're
bringing.
No doubt,
over
and
there.
I can't blame them for thinking that.
Yikes! So there you go, breakfast on
what
Sunday
a show.
With the Browns.
We had a lot in that show, boys. Yeah.
Breakfast with the Browns.
Can't wait.
I'd rather eat, honestly. I'd rather get food poisoning from breakfast than have to. You want to talk about no leaves on the ground? Because I get an extra. You throw that one in the morning, I got extra time.
Oh, boy.
Wait a minute. What's the crowd at the Bengals-Colts?
Well, it'll be announced at 50-something, but I'll go.
Legit in-house.
40-ish or less.
I'd give them 40.
Okay.
And that's brutal.
It is brutal.
That's almost 30,000 below capacity. Yeah, you're not even halfway through the year.
And the first mistake that takes place, even though it's 21-3.
But my God, the Colts, come on. They are dreadful.
One more thing on the Bengals.
Yes.
If this season spirals out of control.
Yes.
And you're done.
I know the question.
Do you go to McCarron because you're going to lose him anyway? No. And you want to see if he's a guy? Because imagine Bengals fans if you let him walk and he becomes a playoff quarterback.
I agree with what you're saying there. I don't see them doing that unless it's Andy's fault completely.
Right.
And that's that. But here's what's going to happen. And you made the point. Andy will play well enough in
absolutely.
Other games.
Well, because a lot of the teams that they play coming up don't have juggernaut defenses.
Correct. Jacksonville does. Jacksonville can sack you.
Denver can.
Denver can sack you.
They can.
Denver can.
And they're all, and they're both on the road.
They are.
I mean, so you never know. Man, Denver is suddenly. How about Atlanta?
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Hot take. Bengals will win this week.
I like that.
Well, I was gonna close with that. Well,
you just got a chance for a huge week for you. Reading's gonna win.
Yep.
UC can't lose, and Bengals are gonna
He's
win.
He's right. He's right. It's
just
big.
My week better.
So the city of losers. There you go.
Get down.
Oh, by the way, soccer loss. In case anyone missed it, FC Cincinnati couldn't win the first round. They don't even know that.
That's shut out by the Rowdies. 3-0.
Enjoy your weekend. Alright, you've been listening to the Angry Quarterbacks from your friends.
Shake it around.